Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a special guest, one who I'm really happy to have back on. We spoke with Ms. Jennifer Scribner about 3 months ago about the GAPS diet, and we covered so much with that. We didn't get a chance to discuss other things that she does and that she knows about. Before the interview, we were just talking briefly, and I said to her, and I really think this is true now, people need to be their own physician, because there are so many things that's coming at us daily. And I don't think people really get to know themselves and their body. And now it's really the most important thing that you can do. If you know nothing else, you need to know what makes you tick, what makes you happy, what makes you unhappy. And today we're going to speak about the emotional freedom technique. Before we get started, a little bit about Ms. Scribner. She's a functional nutritional therapy practitioner trained by Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride in 2011. Her specialty is helping people learn and follow this specific diet to address autism and complex digestive and autoimmune conditions. She's the author of From Mac and Cheese to Veggies, Please, How to Get Your Kid to Eat New Foods, End Picky Eating Forever and Stay Sane in the Process, and Navigating GAPS Daily Journal, 90 Days of Tracking Patterns and Progress on the GAPS Nutritional Protocol. And you can follow what she does at bodywisdomnutrition.com. So, Ms. Scribner, I want to thank you so much for joining me today, because I see there's a lot of anxiety out there. My patients come in every day, and part of our conversation seems to always flow to how they're feeling. And I think there's a feeling of powerlessness. I think that seems to be one of the main things which is leading to the anxiety. And I know that emotional freedom technique is, it kind of hones in on the individual getting to know themselves and also controlling that anxiety. So I wanted to go over that with you. First of all, welcome and thank you for coming back. And what is emotional freedom technique?
Yeah, thanks for having me back. I love our conversation. So the emotional freedom technique is a system that someone can do on themselves. It's essentially based like acupuncture. It's tapping parts of the body that would be like your acupressure points while you are talking through what you're feeling. And that may be physical feelings, and that may be the kind of feelings or ruminations that are going on in your mind. And when you're talking through those things, whether it's out loud or not, and you're tapping on these points in the body that have been studied, that will show that it will calm your nervous system. And so what I really love about it is it's something you can do on yourself. You can do it for free, and it's very easy to learn and accessible. And the thing that can seem overwhelming at first, people are like, I don't know what to say, but my approach to it is you just say whatever you're already thinking out loud, and you're telling your nervous system that it's safe to have these things be true, but you're taking the charge out of them when it comes to your physical body and that kind of like emotional response that pops up. And so that's where you get the emotional freedom. It doesn't change the facts of the matter, but what it does is it tells your nervous system that it's safe to be here right now. And from that perspective, once our nervous system is in a calm and grounded space, it's incredible what can open up in front of you, where you will see solutions or ideas that will pop up that you might have been blinded to before. Because when we get into anxiousness, when we get into this hyper-focus mode, it's really like we have blinders on the sides of our eyes, like a horse might wear in Central Park, that we just are narrowed in on something. And once our nervous system is relaxed, it's like those blinders come off and we can see the horizon again. We can sweep our vision around and notice things that have probably been there all along, but we just weren't in a state to see.
You know, what strikes me about what you said is that you're releasing it from a physical standpoint as well. When you're hitting the acupressure points and you're calming the nervous system, this is something that's physically happening, right? You can go to sessions and speak to somebody, but getting through that hurdle of, I guess, voicing it to somebody else sometimes can be a bit of a barrier. But this seems to me, it's a physiological response that allows you to release. And then when the physiological, you know, the thing that makes you anxious or angry or whatever the emotion is, when the charge is out of it, then you can examine it kind of impassionately, right? So you don't continue to drive that stress cycle. Is that how you should think about it?
Yeah, I think of it as something that just puts a little bit of space between you and your worries so that you can see them a little bit more clearly and objectively and from different sides. And it is absolutely something that you can do with a practitioner. It's something you can do with videos online. There are many like free resources like that. There are books that you can get at the library that will talk you through certain scripts that can help you get the hang of it. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, once you do that, it's something that you can use in any given moment just to, you know, calm yourself around any particular issue. And I love that accessibility. And I also love that it can provide some of the benefits of something like meditation. But for so many people, meditation is that the doing nothingness is really, really challenging. And this allows us to actually take a physical action that just, it feels like it moves something, moves energy more specifically than meditation, which I feel like takes a lot more kind of time to recognize the benefits. And it doesn't have that kind of nowness that this does.
When you say nowness, it seems like it's almost instantaneous then, because when you're engaging it, is it releasing energy? Is it, I know in acupuncture, you have meridians and energy spots on the body. Is that what it's doing?
Yeah, so the sequences of tapping will usually be different points on the body that are connected to the major meridians or major organ systems. And so it's kind of hitting different areas that are going to be calming and regulating. And in the acupuncture type terms, it would be, you know, a balancing to the qi type of thing, mm-hmm. where in the more psychological terms, it would be like balancing to the nervous system. And so there's different kind of perspectives that have been studied in the ancient systems versus the more modern systems. But I do love that it is applicable now. So something can, you know, come up in your day at work and you can literally, you know, tap at your desk or, you know, go off into a bathroom stall and tap for a few minutes and then be able to kind of gain that space and be like, okay, it's like that deep exhale out. Now I can go back into this situation and feel more clear-headed about it.
Yeah, it's a lot better than trying to take something, yeah, medication or something recreational to try to get into that space. I love the fact that it's can be on the fly. You can be in traffic, you sounds like, and have a some situation and there's handle it. From the standpoint of the organ systems, like the adrenal gland and the thyroid, which are stress, major stress organs, are there any studies that show that they also, like you can quantitate this in some way and see the calming effect?
That's a great question. I haven't seen any specific organ studies, and they might be out there. Most of the studies that I have noted have been around specific groups of people or specific issues. So people with post-traumatic stress disorder, people that are, you know, veterans of war, mm-hmm. people that have been through sexual abuse. And often it's groups of people who have gone through other therapies, and maybe that's been marginally effective, or maybe they are people who, you know, medication hasn't worked for and they need another modality. And that's how people will kind of be grouped in for these type of studies and to see how that helps them kind of manage their nervous system and kind of cope with their days and the benefits that they see within that versus a specific organ system. But I do think that it's all interconnected, especially when we're talking about, you know, the body. We like to, in modern medicine, separate it into parts. There's psychology and there's physiology and there's, you know, detoxification and there's heart. But really, we are one organism. And so approaching it in that holistic view is beneficial to the whole system, because when we are in the nervous system state where we can be at ease, where we can be relaxed, that is a state of repair and regeneration to the body. That is a state that's helpful to reproduction. The things that the body wants to be doing when it feels safe versus when we're in that stress pattern, we get constricted. We, you know, turn off digestive functions because they're not crucial when we're in an emergency. The reproductive system is not crucial when we're fighting to save our own life, you know, in the physiological state, whether that's happening in reality or not. That's kind of how our nervous system sees those things. And so being able to bring this back into balance can bring the rest of the body back into balance as well.
That makes a makes me think now of how important the GI tract is. You know, it's one of the things that's the underpinning of everything, right? If you can't take your food in, if you can't feed yourself, then you end up affecting a lot of different organ systems. Immune system comes to mind. Do you find that, because the gut is so sensitive to the emotional state, that when people are able to find that space and create that calm, carve out, that their GI tract works better?
Absolutely. And that was part of what brought me to this type of modality, because I specialize in the gut and I work with so many people with different digestive issues. And I started to see the connections between the, you know, physiological and psychological states. And I never want to be someone who's like, oh, your digestive problems are all in your head, because I know that that's how IBS was presented for years. It was just like, oh, we can't find anything wrong with you on this test that we're doing at your GI doctor, so it must be in your head. I don't think it's like that. But there is, you know, research that talks about hypnosis for IBS and that kind of thing. And so there is a connection, and often it's referred to as the second brain, because we have so much nervous system tissue within the gut lining itself that there is an interrelationship there. And often people may be doing all of the quote unquote perfect things for their gut, but if they aren't regulating their nervous system state, they aren't looking at their emotions, they aren't kind of checking out like how they're interacting with the world, they would only go so far when it came to healing the gut and how that would be healing the body. And so this was a piece that for me, I wanted to be able to share with people in my practice and to bring, you know, something accessible into the awareness that could help them get to the next level. And for other people, this might be where they start. It may be that changing dietary, you know, patterns are so overwhelming that just calming the nervous system is the first step for them to even be able to open their mind into making some dietary change.
The power of this is really startling, because, you know, if, as a physician, if the patient is behind some sort of emotional wall, it's hard to help them heal themselves. And I can imagine the breakthroughs that you must experience when people are able to let go. You know, there's a lot of things to let go of these days. I guess I can ask a different way. When they're resistant and they're in this fight or flight mode, are you able, do you have to break through that using this technique, for example, in order to get them to open up and then start the healing process?
You know, for people that come to my practice, they tend to know about the gut and psychology syndrome diet. And so they're coming to me for that specific help. So they have awareness of how much diet is going to play a role and how much, you know, healing the gut, repopulating the gut with healthy flora is important. And often this is a missing piece for them within that. And so in my practice, that tends to come first. The food tends to come first. But I know for other people, especially when you're going to a more general practitioner, or maybe it's even a specialist in something else, in a, you know, in a functional medicine capacity or a mainstream medicine capacity, that it's so overwhelming to think about how to make changes towards your health. And there can seem like so much conflicting information out there. You know, when I look at a place like Instagram, I have things pop up in my feed that are just physiologically inaccurate that are being put forth as like the keys to health from certain accounts. And so I understand like what the, you know, we're being bombarded by so many different messages, and it's so hard to know like which thing to do, which thing to follow. And I felt that same way before I studied nutrition. But when we can do something like this that may be calming, it can help us get in tune with ourselves, like you mentioned at the beginning of the call. And then it becomes easier to discern what path we want to take, what we want to experiment with, you know, one choice that we're willing to make a habit out of and see how that works for our body, rather than feeling like we need to go out and seek somebody else's plan that they can like fix us and put something in our life that we just need to do. It allows you to open up to your inner wisdom and what is the next step that you need to take. And I really believe that as much as I know, as much as I study, it always comes back to that individual person. So anything that I might advise a person on and anything that I understand about, you know, feeding human physiology is always going to be secondary to that person's lived experience with what it is that they're trying, and helping them to understand and kind of trust their own gut. And this is another kind of tool towards that end.
That's a great place to take our first break, because you just stopped off with how powerful the individual is. Really, I'll ask a question on the other side of the break about the feeling of powerfulness and powerlessness and how that feeds into this whole problem. So let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Jennifer Scribner, and you can find her website, bodywisdomnutrition.com. There's a wealth of information, also information on how you can work with her. And before the break, we were talking about how powerful an individual is. To me, and correct me if I'm wrong, part of, I don't know, disease processes, obviously things happen to people. But when it's something that's driven by internal, right? Internal strife or conflict. Do you find, or is it reasonable to think that if someone is some aspect of their life, they're unable to deal with it, or it's somehow feeding some sort of negative energy, energetic level, by controlling that, by facing that, does it help the self-healing process, I guess is the best way to put it?
Absolutely. And that's been my experience, since I work with people with such complex illnesses, with autoimmunity, with, you know, 20-year illnesses. And there was a pattern of people who, you know, would do all the right things for diet and kind of basic lifestyle, and just kind of couldn't break through a threshold within that. And what I started to see was that there was some other patterning in their life. Often it would be people pleasing. It might be being in really negative relationships, not necessarily even abusive, but just kind of borderline, not good for them relationships, work that they really hated, you know, overextending themselves in different ways. And I noticed these patterns in people who just kind of couldn't cross a certain, you know, level of health. And at first I couldn't speak to people about it because I had never examined any of these things in my own life. And I was overworking and overgiving and kind of living out these patterns of pleasing. And I myself had to take a step back and look at myself that way. And I felt like with the nutritional changes I had made, the tapping that I had gotten into, it kind of built this little foundation where I was like emotionally and psychologically ready to take a look at that. And that is what gave me more of the confidence to start speaking about that, making those changes in my own life. Because we can do, you know, the right things on paper, but if we're still bending over backwards, if we're still dealing with, you know, maybe it is parents or in-laws who are mean to us or who we're trying to please and it's never going to work. I mean, some of us, we just are in really tough situations, and we have to learn to be able to, you know, stand in our own power, advocate for what it is that we want. And we can do that with kindness, but we need to be able to do that in a direct way. And to, it's a lot of different facets that will come together for that. But doing those things is what helps the person to be more integrated and to be taking better care of themselves. And so when I look at something like that with people, it's not that we are, you know, we often will feel like we're harming somebody or we're affronting them because we're not pleasing them the way that they want to be pleased, versus, okay, what am I going to do to take the best loving care of myself? And when I take really loving care of myself and I build my boundaries and I say no when that's appropriate for me in a kind way, that provides me with energy and vitality that then I can put forth more of the betterness in myself, mm-hmm. and be who I want to be in the world, versus just trying to, you know, keep everybody else happy. Like, there is something that happens when you really address your deep needs that allows compassion and care and energy to bubble out from you. That's very healing to those around you, but it does take some discernment and some choice and sometimes some, you know, reevaluating your connection.
You know, you make me think of a lot of different things about the people pleasing aspect of, I think, what it means to be a member of society. There seems to be a line to me that's crossed. You have to be a member, at least the group mentality is. You need to be a part of the whole. Otherwise, somehow you're not a good person. And I would think that that kind of disempowers people to want to pursue what makes them tick and what makes them happy, because that thought of going against the grain, against the larger whole, is somehow bad, but it doesn't jibe with what or who you are. How does that play in? I mean, do you see that at all as part of some of the fracturing of our society and the amount of, you know, pathology mentally and physically that's out there? It seems to me that there's an energy that's driving people away from their greater good, which by definition, if everybody's pursuing what they like, it works for everybody. But that's not how the society is running. Do you see it that way?
I do. And I think that Dr. Gabor Mate speaks a lot to this, and he has several different books, but the most recent is The Myth of Normal, and he addresses these kind of things in depth. And where I've seen this is because I work predominantly with people in the United States and in North America, but I also have quite a few European clients. And it's a very different experience working with Europeans than it is with Americans. There are conversations that I have all the time with other Americans about, you know, maybe I can't eat the things at this potluck, or I'm going to send my kids to their grandmother's house and she wants to make them cookies. What should I do? My kids are going to be left out of this, or I'm not going to fit in if I don't do that. And it's very, very uncommon that I would ever have that kind of conversation with a European. They have more of this attitude of like, I need to do what I need to do. And it's not an offense to anybody else if I'm, you know, taking care of myself. It's not personal. It's not always like pathologized, and there's not this desperate need to fit in. It's just kind of what I would call more of a sense of belonging. And, you know, there's some level of like, take it or leave it, but not in a way that's like, oh, I, you know, I'm just being me and like, you're rude to people, but just like, this is truly who I am. This is truly what I need. I want to participate in this group, in this society, in this family. And these are the needs that I have within that. And then I don't have an expectation that you're going to bend over backwards for me, but I also don't have some expectation that I'm just going to do things the way you want. We can meet and be interdependent. Whereas in American society, I find so often that people feel extremely self-conscious about that, or we really want to get other people to view things our way in order to interact with them, rather than just showing up and saying like, hey, this is where my needs are. It's impersonal. I'm going to take care of mine. I want to be with you too. I don't expect you to do a special cooking or make a special recipe, but please don't expect me to eat your, you know, XYZ ice cream that really upsets my gut either.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting observation. I wonder if that's part of the problem that we're having in our society, where what's considered to be normal, what's considered to be what it means to be a citizen in society, is so overwhelmingly pushed, and everybody just wants to be polite and get along. But in actuality, underneath it, it's bubbling. This negative energy is bubbling, and it's hitting everybody, and it's affecting everybody. So even if everybody seems like they're getting along and going along, underneath, that's not what's happening. It's not compatible with positive energy, which is compatible with health. Do you think that's one of the reasons that we're seeing so many illnesses, in not the classic sense, but the suicide rate is up, the people feeling lonely is up? I mean, they're connected to social media 24/7, but they're lonely. I mean, to me, this strikes me as one of the baseline problems, because people are interacting, you know, it's not authentic, and it actually can't be, because you're trying to create and sustain a norm that doesn't fit you.
Yeah, and there's this resentment that builds up, and I think that's something that can eat people, you know, from the inside. And any of those emotions that we think of as like negative or constricting, or, you know, somebody being a pain in the butt, like mm-hmm. those kind of things manifest in the body. And that's what Dr. Gabor Mate, you know, talks about in the studies in his books too. It's like these things do kind of eat us internally, rather than us being willing to kind of do the work to just, you know, say, hey, here's what I need. And, you know, here's how we can interact together. And also the idea that we need to align so much with other people in order to have relationships with them, in order to have friendships with them. I think that it can be, you know, on the, when we're online, it's so like this or that, and there's so many things that get us riled up. And when we are interacting with first people in person, you know, you may see somebody has a very different belief from you. And for me, I'm like, oh, I wonder how they came to that belief. And I will always, you know, try to draw out questions like, oh, what made you think that? Or what experiences in your life led you to, you know, this, and have that kind of curiosity and compassion with people so that you don't have to only be in with people who are exactly like you. And that could create a lot of ease in certain ways. Like I'll say for sure, when I'm around my, you know, nutrition friends, my Weston Price friends, and I can eat and not have to think about the canola oil or, you know, worry about those things, there is some sort of ease with that. But that doesn't mean that I can't have, you know, healthy relationships and only cross over with somebody, you know, 40% and still enjoy that. And I think that's that kind of like, am I trying to fit in here or am I going to be myself and find if this is a place of belonging? Because if people can't truly accept me for who I am, deeply inside the real me, then they're just not my people. And that may not be personal. We may just not vibe. And sometimes your life evolves and some of those friendships may evolve too. And one of the things I see when people are really making a change in their health and their lifestyle is that some of those relations don't fit as well as they did before. And there's a lull before you meet your new people that may meet you in those aspects. And that lull is a really hard place to be in because you feel very lonely. But then you keep putting yourself out there as somebody who is authentic. You follow your interests, and maybe your interests in health lead you to a meetup or a potluck around something. And over time, you will find other people that you may connect with on in those kind of areas. And maybe you don't connect 100% with them either, but you have this level of overlap that allows you to be moving in different parts of society in a way that's socially fulfilling.
You know, that to me goes back to the initial part of our conversation and the ability with tapping to, I guess, examine instead of just going through things and just floating, not being happy, not knowing really why, just going along to get along. The tapping actually makes you stop, I would think, and examine your motivations, examine what makes you tick. Really, I would think, get to know yourself. Is that one aspect of it?
Yeah, like there's things, we all have our ruminations, and you might be, you know, ruminating on something like, for instance, just before this call, I was feeling nervous and I did a little bit of tapping and I said, even though I'm, you know, nervous, who am I to talk about these things? And the other part of me was like, well, you're a person who's been tapping for over 10 years. You have this personal experience. You have this to share with people, you know? And so it kind of like, set you in that moment where you're like, wait a second, my mind is telling me two different things. And so what I was able to do with that was like, what I feel as nervousness is also the same physiological sensations that can feel excitement. And so maybe I'm not so nervous as I am excited, but there is a combination there. And it gave me that little gap of an opening to see it differently. And then that helped me to be calm and be like, okay, I know where I kind of stand in this conversation, in this moment. I don't expect myself to have to be perfect here, but I can take that exhale and be, you know, prepared to face the situation in an open-minded way.
Now imagine if you just keep extrapolating that to things that you're a little bit reticent or nervous, no matter meeting new people, going to new situations, taking a new job, going to class, you know, all these things that help people grow. And I want to take a break, our second break, but I would love to ask the question about whether people get stagnant because of fear. And is this a way to actually jog yourself out of it? Honestly, it's life is a challenge. Everything is new if you really want to get out there and live it. So let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Jennifer Scribner. And before the break, it just made me think about everything, you know, when you're young and growing up, I don't care how old you are, you still learn really. But the fact that you're able to step out of your comfort zone, be able to learn new things, it's just so, to me, boring. If I would just hang around people who think exactly like I do, I wouldn't learn anything. It's about learning for me. So being able, and again, being in touch with your emotions and being able to control them and being able to let go what doesn't serve you, do you think that would, that ability to be comfortable enough with yourself to interact with somebody who's completely different from you, is that something that, one, would tapping be an adjunct to being able to do that? And two, how do you think that, I mean, again, a big question, but from a societal standpoint, do you think it would make us more cohesive?
Yeah. And I'll say for my own life, as somebody who had a really, you know, fixed mindset versus a growth mindset. So the way that I grew up, the way I saw myself was you're either good at something or you're not. And don't bother doing things unless you know you can be good at them. That was very limiting because it's very unusual to be great at something from the start. And so I held myself back from trying many things. And this is still something that goes on with me, especially when it comes to, you know, physical, like a sport or a game or something. There, I tend to be shy about those things because I want to be good at something before I do it. I'm afraid of criticism. I have this strong perfectionist streak within me. And using a tool like tapping helped me to, again, open my mindset to where I could take that step and not feel like I had to be perfect, and to even say to myself through tapping, like, okay, maybe I don't have all the answers to this, but I'm willing to find them. I'm willing to learn. I'm okay with making mistakes. I know that I can recover. You know, so much of the ways that we hold ourselves back is really our own internal talk. And if we can change that internal talk and actually get out of our own perfectionism, get out of our own, you know, need to be seen in a certain way, we can develop ourselves, we can grow, and we can give ourselves a lot of grace. You know, that was such a big change for me, that I don't need to be perfect anymore. I make mistakes, I'm willing to own up to them, and I'm willing to take, you know, more of these kind of quote unquote risks because of that. And that has helped me grow and develop and continue to kind of look at new things and new areas. And I too think that, you know, I want to feel vitality in my life. I want to feel like I'm really living. I now am really devoted to growth and to learning and to exploration and understanding new things about the world, because that to me can be integrated into my worldview, what I have to offer other people, the, you know, person that I can be in the world that can be of compassion and service, rather than trying to kind of just, you know, stay in my little corner and stay really, really safe all the time. It wasn't really leading me to safety. It was leading me to stay kind of boxed in versus having the security, knowing that I can come back to myself as a person who can self-regulate, as a person who can calm myself. And that builds in that ability to see yourself as someone that can recover, even if you say something silly or slip up a little bit. It's not the end of the world. And that's kind of how it can feel to those of us who especially experience anxiety. We're always future tripping and thinking like, oh, this could go wrong and I will feel so embarrassed or so ashamed, or I'm going to look stupid. And so being able to regulate ourselves in a way that we're able to take those steps, and then you can see how you're building upon that, and then your life can kind of start blossoming outward from there.
So what's the connection then between fear and anxiety? Seems like they're connected to each other.
You know, that's the way that I view anxiety, and there's different versions of anxiety, but so much of it is that fear of the future. Mm-hmm. Whereas I see, you know, depression as the, you know, thoughts of the past and like the dissatisfaction with, you know, the way things are, versus anxiety is, and that was more how things presented in my life, is like unknown futures, unknown, and, you know, things might go wrong. So to me, fear and anxiety are really paired together.
That's a really good observation. And then fear also manifests as anger, doesn't it? And anger manifests in a lot of different ways in society. It's like it's this negative, it's never in the present. That's what it seems to me. It's either something that already happened or something that's going to happen, and you're living outside of what is. It's not healthy, and it doesn't allow you to change your future if you can't be in the moment. Because you can control what's going on now. You can't control what happened or what's going to happen.
And you can only really control or have agency over yourself and your response to things. And so that, to me, is something that can be such a beautiful shift for all of us is that ability to understand that we can handle things and to not expect that everything's going to go our way, but that we can kind of ride those waves. I know for me, again, another thing that will come up for my type of anger is I'll be really defensive if I am, you know, somebody says something to me that's confronting or, you know, I think I'm right. And my immediate response would be like, oh, I'm mad at you and I want to defend my point of view. But to be able, and not to say I don't do that in the moment at times, I still do, but then to be able to take that and say, oh, you know, I was really defensive. Was there some truth in that? What do I have to learn from this situation? How can I calm my nervous system in a way that allows me to see what would be a response to a situation like that, where I would feel better about myself, where I would feel like I was, you know, kind of a higher version of myself. That's what I'm aiming for. And how might I do things differently? And so having that nervous system regulation, and again, that space to look at yourself and a little bit of self-reflection, that's not strictly critical, but okay, maybe I started from a critical point, but I'm able to transform that into a more broad perspective of how I can truly improve without feeling like I have to do it perfect every single time, but I have a tool that can help me transform these things.
It also strikes me that if you can be compassionate with yourself, then you have the ability to be compassionate with other people. I mean, if you don't give yourself a break, how can you possibly give anybody else one, right?
Yeah. And I used to tell myself this story that I'm not harder on anybody else than I am on myself, because I was highly self-critical. And that was my justification for being mean to myself and in ways other people. And so that's exactly the type of thing that I had to examine, you know, and now how much compassion for myself can I show to other people as well? And I do think that those things kind of, you know, grow in lockstep together, and they allow you to have more grace for other people, because you can, again, see them as a person who's having a hard day, or a person who's experiencing this emotion, or a person who might be triggered by something, rather than referring to them as an angry person, or, you know, how we tend to label people and just say, oh, it's a black or white situation, but kind of pull the gray area and be like, oh, you know what, maybe they're having a really rough day, and I'm going to, you know, still be my highest version of myself in this situation if I can. And if not, then I can examine that later and find out a way to do that better next time.
It's just freeing from what you just described. It's just, you just let things happen, you know, live your life and not try to control it. That's a one thing too, is that this ego-driven, I control everything. And when it doesn't work that way, you have no recourse, no, you know, skills in order to try to make sense of it. Is there some ego side to this negative side to people? It's just, it's all about me, but I don't feel good about myself. That's just such a contradictory emotion, isn't it?
Yeah. And that need to control things, or the need to be in charge. And sometimes that's placed on people where they were told that they needed to fix things, that they needed to take care of stuff, you know, in their family or in their relationship. So that can be really deeply ingrained as the person who is the problem solver or the fixer or whatever it may be. And to, again, giving yourself grace around something like that. We can't control everything. For me, it was a real revelation in life, because we're taught so much this pursuit of happiness. And I do want to be happy, but I want to be at peace. And I also know that I don't have control over what may be happening in the world, what may be happening on the road, what might be happening with my pets in the backyard. And, you know, emergencies arise, things happen, stuff breaks. And rather than getting constantly agitated that life isn't working out in my favor at all times, I've been able to take that into, oh, well, this is just life. These are situations that are presented in front of me. How can I deal with that in this moment to the best of my ability? And maybe there's a way that I can help head some of this off. But rather than feeling so upset that everything wasn't going my way, and one of the quotes that is a favorite of mine now that I had heard on a podcast years ago was, relax, everything is out of control. Yeah. And that made a big impact on me, because I'm definitely someone who wants to be in control, wants things to go my way. And so when I'm like, how can I relax into the idea that it's really in someone else's hands at all time. And I'm just here to like focus on what's in front of me rather than try to control the future, try to fix the past. Like, how can I just be here now and transform myself to be better in the present as that keeps evolving?
Well, just to go back to tapping, if people have anxiety or they're emotionally driven by things that happened, it sounds to me that if you're able to acquire that ability to tap, you can diffuse that, because it's like a loop, isn't it? I mean, you can, like, people get triggered, for example, for certain things or certain situations. Is this a tool that people can use to unhook themselves from that emotional physiologic response?
Yes, that's my experience. And I'll share with you the first time that I really like kind of road tested tapping. I had learned it a little bit myself, but every year we would go on this drive to on a trip, and we would end up, it was a very long drive, and there would be a 2-hour stretch where we'd be driving through the desert, and there would be deer, there would be rabbits, there would be like little rodents crossing the road. And I would just be nerve wracked on this part of the drive. I'd be gripping the wheel. By the time we got through there and we got to our destination, I was so exhausted and stressed. And after I learned tapping, I decided, okay, the gas station before we get on this part of the road, I'm just going to stand there and tap. I don't care if people think I am a crazy person. I'm just going to do what I need to do, because I was already geared up in that nervous system state that I'm so worried I'm going to hit a deer. And so I did tapping, and it was like almost 15 minutes of this to really get myself calmed and centered, because I knew that being on edge like that wasn't making me a better driver. It was just exhausting me. And so through tapping in that one time, even though it was, you know, a lengthy little session there, I got myself to where I felt calm again and got on the road. And then we went through that drive. The exact same things happened as usual. There were bunnies trying to cross. There were deer, but I was able to navigate safely and not get totally activated, and to arrive at the end of our trip and feel like I was, you know, refreshed enough that I could participate. I didn't need a day to recover from all of these kind of stress hormones that would typically be pumping through me. And so that was such a big, you know, kind of testimonial for me of the power of that, because I'd had that experience so many times, and I was able to shift myself and have literally the same physical situation happen, but experience it completely differently.
Oh, that's a nice story. I mean, everybody's got something like that, that they dread, or they're on 10 before it even happens, just the thought of it. So anything, again, that we can do to take more power, more control over our bodies, our lives, our emotions, I think it puts us in a good stead. So let's take our last break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Jennifer Scribner. And on your site, you have a section that says Work With Me. Can you tell listeners a little bit about that, how they can contact you if they want to start working along with you?
Yeah, so Working With Me is generally going to be a combination of working on your gut health, working on your lifestyle when it comes to the type of products that you're putting on your body and your home, and then also this nervous system regulation piece, whether that be through tapping or kind of other modalities. There can be different ones to choose from. And so typically I will work with people on an initial consultation and have a kind of a full purview of your health history, what your goals and concerns are, and then work together to personalize a plan for you and to follow that for 6 weeks and then to make adjustments. Because anytime I work with somebody, I'm looking at how is it working for you? What is evolving for you in a really great way? What are you stuck on, or what can't you implement? How can we make this a reality for you to really change your lifestyle? I'm not someone who wants to see you, you know, do something in 30 days. I'm someone who wants to see you take small steps that really do add up over time to create a more health supporting lifestyle.
I think that's, you're fixing the problem, not just treating the symptom. And it's lifestyle changes what you're talking about, and making organic changes that are forever, not just some sort of fad. Now, we talked about tapping, but our environment is important, is it not? I mean, what we are surrounding ourselves with in terms of EMF or the cleaning agents that we use, they all count in keeping our systems from being dysregulated. Is that something that we need to think about?
Yeah, that's definitely something that I address with people. And this, again, can be a really overwhelming topic. And it's just like, make one small change at a time, because so many of those things will have chemicals that are something that we have to process through the liver. There may be things that are disruptive to our gut flora that's causing our digestion to be off. There can be endocrine disrupting chemicals, especially in the chemicals that we're putting on our body every day, purportedly for beauty and body care. There can be, you know, cancer causing fragrances that are being emitted that we can just swap something out that will take another burden off of the body. And those things are all really, you know, additive as far as the burden. And as we start shifting that and subtracting those things, that frees up energy for the body to have more reparative capacity.
And the body is so many, it's so sensory driven, right? So what we look at counts, colors that we look at, things that we listen to. And essential oils is something that I used, and patients have asked me about it. Are essential oils also important? Because the sense of smell, I mean, it's the first cranial nerve. It's the first nerve that connects directly to the brain. So it seems to me that what you smell and things that are in your environment may actually help your mood as well. Do you find that that's true?
Yeah, and I've seen that with a number of clients as well, especially with kids who maybe have sensory processing issues or have a hard time with communication. Because our sense of smell is so direct and it's so quick, it can be another something that will shift the nervous system state very readily for people. And it's interesting because, you know, certain smells are associated with more calming states, but it can also have to do with your memory of that smell. So that's something to keep in mind when someone's like, oh, lavender is a very calming scent, you should use that to help you relax before bed. If you had some sort of altercation with somebody at a lavender farm, or when there was lavender lotion being used, you know, that may actually be a really negative sensory experience for you. So being able to pull forth the things that you're drawn towards, and to really understand, again, that this has to be individualized for people. But it's something that I find can really, you know, shift the mood, shift kind of the vibe of the room. And we've generally experienced something like that. You know, maybe it is the smell of cookies baking and what that, you know, brings us back to. Maybe it is the, you know, like the smell of Christmas trees is another really prominent example of, you know, good times for most people. Certain, you know, colognes might be so annoying to you because you had a coworker who you, you know, disliked that wore that. And some might be really pleasant because they reminded you of your grandmother, for example. And so the sense that we're exposed to can mean different things for us, but they can also really impact our nervous system and just our overall sensory experience.
Well, with that in mind, how can people really hone in on things that they don't, that their body doesn't agree with? I mean, how do you know if you're living in a toxic environment? You know it from the people you're around. That's pretty easy. But what about your home or your workplace? Is there something you need to look for?
You know, when it comes to home products, I really look for anything that has fragrance that is not an essential oil, because artificial fragrances are all things that are toxic. They will either be disruptive to our hormonal system. They will be things that can accumulate and lead to cancer in the long run, things that are carcinogens. And so for me, working on eliminating any of those things that have smell, and frankly, most things don't need to have smell. So that's one really simple change that people can make. Get it unscented. You know, now they sell garbage bags that are fragrance implanted. Like, that's supposed to really help. All you have is like stinky garbage and like fake smells too. I mean, that's one of those little things that just really irritates me. It's like so ridiculous that this even exists. And then you're touching that and you're getting that into your skin. And it's, again, this other chemical toxin that you're absorbing. It means so many things. Why does my dishwasher soap need to have a smell? Like, I don't, like, make my dishes clean. It doesn't need to be like smelling like something coming out of there. So these things are kind of my pet peeves. And so I encourage people to find the fragrance free or the free and clear or the unscented of any of these products, like reducing all of that as much as possible. And if there really is an issue of smell within your home, addressing that at the root level. You know, if the garbage is smelling because of the leftovers, maybe the leftovers go in a bag in the freezer until it's garbage day so that they aren't just festering there in the garbage can, for example.
Makes sense. And in terms of the essential oils, are there a core different oils that you recommend people have, just they need to have in their environment?
There's a handful of really basics. I mean, there can be so many different blends that I really love the fragrance of, or that will be, you know, calming, or that might do something specific as far as using them on a scrape or something like that. But the most basic common one that I always have with me would be lavender, because that can be used on the skin, that can be used on, you know, a bug bite, that can be used to help calm you if it's a calming scent for you. If you're, you know, amped up and can't get to sleep, or on the road, or, you know, traveling or something, that's one of my favorites. Another one of my favorites is actually an essential oil called Copa Iba. And it's not necessarily the greatest smelling oil, but it's one that I love to use if I've had, like, you know, a twisted ankle, a skin abrasion, something like that. It can really help bring the inflammation down in those sorts of cases. And so that's been a very powerful thing that you can, you know, have on hand, and it's so small, but can really make a big difference as far as like a first aid type of thing. And then there's some blends that I like to have too. So I personally use Young Living essential oils, but many companies have a version of this. Theirs is called Thieves, and it's a blend of oils that will have antimicrobial properties. That's really nice for kind of cleansing, or for diffusing in the air if you're, you know, wanting to cleanse the air too. And it, to me, has a nice scent. It's like cinnamon and a few other things in there. And then they have another blend called Digize that I always have on hand as well. And that's like a digestive support. And I tend to carry the version that you can use internally, so I can just put a drop under my tongue if I'm feeling any, you know, digestive distress, particularly with travel or eating out, when I'm coming into contact with like lower quality stuff than I would at home. It's a nice little addition instead of, you know, using over-the-counter stomach acid suppressant or something like that. I would use this type of thing that is known to, you know, enhance digestion in a positive way.
No, I didn't know that. And so is there, that you just mentioned one that you can take in the body. Do you recommend, or are the other ones something you rub on the skin, or you use a diffuser?
You know, most of them, they can be used externally, like rubbing on the skin, or they can be inhaled kind of directly from the bottle or on a cotton pad, or put in a diffuser. I like to use a diffuser sometime, but often the ones that I use that I will kind of carry with me, if they're in my handbag, if I'm going on a trip, those four that I mentioned are ones that don't necessarily need to be diffused. They can be more topical.
Well, there's so many things, honestly, that you've just given us a wealth of things that we can do for ourselves, that I think from an individual standpoint, it's really exciting, because you can try everything, see what works best for you. And what you just described as being, it's all individualized. It's what makes you vibrant, what makes you feel good. And by definition, how you can extend that. You know, we're all energetically connected, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah. And the things that work for, you know, a lot of people may or may not work for you. And so I really encourage people, you know, follow your hunches, experiment with something, see what it resonates with your body, see how it feels to you, and then decide if it's something that you want to have in your day-to-day life. We don't need to have every single tool that's out there in the world, but when we find a handful of things that really work for us, we know that we can always like return back to them. And to me, that can keep things simple. There can be some testing that goes on, but you have your core, you know, set of, maybe it's products, maybe it's ways of eating, you know, any of those modalities that you might be using that you're like, this really works to me. I know I can come back and rely on that, and I don't need to keep searching. I can come back to the basics each time.
I think that's a wonderful place to stop. How can people reach you? And again, how can they get your books and also your website?
Yes, my website is bodywisdomnutrition.com. They can also find me on Instagram at that same name, as well as Facebook. And I sell my book, From Mac and Cheese to Veggies Please, which is a picky eating book for parents. And then the Navigating Gaps Daily Journal, which is a food journaling system for people following the GAPS nutritional protocol. Those are both sold on my website, and they are both almost sold on Amazon. The journal is just about to be released on Amazon. That's my From Mac and Cheese to Veggie Sleeves is on there for sure.
Well, Ms. Gribner, thank you so much for joining me. It was an absolute pleasure speaking with you. I just feel I'm even more empowered now to handle my business and keep myself healthy emotionally and physically.
That's wonderful. Thanks for having me. I really encourage people to think about their own embodiment and to take things into their own hands, because there's not anybody out there who is going to know you better or care more about what happens to you than you. So we really need to learn how to take care of ourselves and also how to advocate for ourselves.
Well said. I want to thank you very much for joining me, and thank you everybody for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.